Hello and thanks once again for taking the time to download and listen to a podcast on CelticUnderground.net. After much promotion, much trailing, we finally have the podcast that provides you, the listener, with the world-famous Celtic Underground Top 10.
You won't admit you love me, and so how am I ever to know?
Now, I know some trinkets and baubles have been handed out already for the players for the last season, but everybody and their dog is waiting for the outcome of the world-famous Celtic Underground Top 10 this year. Like last year, we went away from the usual elite panel who vote for Samanas, and we decided to open up to everybody, and we had over 200 votes in, so that's apologies for why it has taken so long, but counting 200 plus votes is a wee bit time consuming when you have other things in life to do. So eventually managed to get that done, and we pulled together an elite group of Celtic Underground pundits. Hullboy was supposed to be on and passed on his apologies. He was stuck on the one road, it was the wrong road, and he didn't manage to make it for the Skype call, but we did manage to rescue Lackey Moore from the Firth of Clyde. He berthed his boat, clambered home, and managed to get onto Skype. We had St Anthony calling in, making use of modern technology for the first time and making a Skype call. It did take a wee while to set up, but we got there. And finally, we have our South American expert, Mark Cooper, sitting there in the depths of winter, which sounds like a Scottish summer day, and myself, and we discussed the top 10. We start at number 10, get through to the top 2. Before we get on to the top 2, we then discuss the Samanas Award and why Mark wasn't a good judge on that. And then we get to the top 2. I know, you're biting your nails, you can't wait. So, enough of me. I'm passing over to the guys. This is the season 2016-17 Celtic Underground Top 10.
Perhaps.
So I'm joined now by an eminent gallery, because I can see their faces, of Celtic Underground luminaries. We have Lackey Moore, Mark Cooper and St Anthony. How are you doing, guys?
I'm fine, thanks.
Now, I normally start with a weather forecast update, so I'm going to start in my screen. I've got the people in order of Lackey, Mark, Saint. So, Lackey, where are you? How's the weather?
I'm in Dumfries, and it's dull. And I think it's cool tonight. I was feeling cold earlier on.
Temperature?
I've no idea, but I was feeling cold.
How's the boat?
The boat is tied up nicely, then a few days away. It was brilliant.
Good, good. Mark, where are you and how's the temperature?
I'm in Buenos Aires and it's midweek, well, just the start of winter here, so it's about 8, 9, 10 degrees, drizzly, grey winter.
Oh, sounds like yesterday in Scotland. Saint, where are you and how's the weather?
I'm in Renfrew at the moment and it's cloudy and dull and it's probably about 16 degrees.
I can see, I'm in Glasgow and I can see patches of blue sky. Hey, I'm not far from Celtic Park, that's probably why. Oh, sun always shines on the righteous. So we've got the Celtic Underground Top 10 finally after about 6 months of trailing. This is coming. I should offer apologies for Jim, he's on his holidays, and for Hullboy, he's on the one road, maybe the wrong road, but he's on the road to God knows where, and he can't make it back to the Skype in time, so those two would have been joining us. So we've got the Celtic Underground Top 10. So the guys know numbers 10 through to number 3, but they don't know who finished in the top 2, so we're going to reveal that in a great reveal, which will be very exciting. So if I go in 10th, 9th and 8th place, we have Lustig, Gordon and Simonovic, actually, because Gordon and Simonovic are joint 9th place or joint 8th place, whichever way you're going up and down the league table. So Lackey, do you want to kick off Lustig in 10th place and then Gordon and Simonovic jointly in front of them? What's your thoughts?
I was surprised at Lustig being in the top 10. He had some interesting performances and seem to get a sort of cult following towards the end of the season. I think he's still a weak link in the back four. I just don't think he's entirely comfortable.
One of your things has been to say that Lustig's legs have gone. That was one of your common things last sort of 18 months. So what's your thoughts on Lustig being in at number 10 ahead of Callum McGregor, or last year's top goal scorer Lee Griffiths, or even Forrest, who was a first team starter for up until the last 2.5 months of the season? What's your thoughts, Saint?
Who's that, to Harry?
You.
Oh, me, sorry. Lustig, he's a fairly consistent player, but I don't think he's got long left, to be honest. I think in terms of longevity, having said that, but judging last season, and he was a fairly consistent player who had two spectacular moments, the first one being the Rabona thing at McDermott Park, which created a great goal, and the second one being the obvious one at Ibrox, where he scored a goal which will be remembered for many years to come. So he's probably well worth a place in the top 10 on that basis.
Do you think, Mark, some of the voting came down to people just, as Lackey said, Lustig a cult figure with his goal celebrations and perhaps his fifth goal at Ibrox?
A wee bit, yeah. I also think that there's a waiting on the last kind of 4 months of the season rather than the whole season. And I agree with Lackey saying that he didn't start that well, but he kind of came onto a bit of a game. I think in about, I don't know, September, October, I was also kind of thinking, as Lustig is a wee bit of a weak link, especially in European games, sometimes when the defence are trying to kind of circulate the ball and it gets to Lustig and it just isn't as fluid as the other players, and he maybe needs an extra touch or something. Mm-hmm. So I agree in terms of Lustig's quite an interesting player because, firstly, as a fullback, he's pretty atypical. He's about 6'2". And you rarely get a fullback that's, 6'1". Mm-hmm. And that he used to be, weirdly, even for that kind of fullback, he used to be a kind of box-to-box fullback,
yeah,
making overlapping runs. And now he's almost turned into a kind of right-sided centre-back if Tierney's going up to join the midfield and he's kind of on the right side of a kind of three. And to be honest, I think that role kind of suits him more now that he doesn't have the legs anymore. That said, he still, like, I thought in the last, say, 4 months of the season, he actually came onto a bit of a game. Whereas before, I was thinking that, I think I said in podcast before, at the start of last season, that I would have thought he would have been a position we might want to improve on.
It's interesting you say about him being box-to-box, because I was looking him up. In the 3 seasons before we signed him for Rosenborg, he scored 8, 9 and 8 goals. So patently we signed him because he was an attacking fullback who scored goals. And then for most of the time he's been with us, he's played, well, last season I think he played 6 games. The season before last he played something like 6 games, and then before that it was early 20s number of games, and then all of a sudden this season he's playing every week. George, after Lustig, we've got Gordon and Simonovic tied. This time last year, Simonovic was on his way to Turin for a medical.
Yeah.
So were you surprised that he stuck around and went through the January transfer window and he's now one of our key defenders?
Well, I'm not surprised he's one of our key defenders. I was astonished that we were prepared to sell him. I had a feeling if they were prepared to sell him, it was a fitness issue. I didn't expect him to come back having a fear of a medical. But I was pleased when he did come back, because I thought, we didn't sign this boy just to sell him right away without him getting a chance to settle into the team. And I think he's a really, really good player. He's got a lot of potential to be a better player. So that, I was really happy that he came back, and it didn't surprise me settling into the team. And I think Gordon, he had a shaky start to the season, but he ended up being one of the key players. Because he does make good saves. It was erratic errors that he made at times. I had doubts about him.
But there's something saying, because Gordon has now made it into our top 10 when 5-6 games into the season it was looking doubtful that he would make, again looking doubtful he would make it to Christmas, because De Vries had been signed and Gordon was on the bench, and it was because he couldn't pass out from the back. I'm just trying to see, Gordon wasn't in your top 10, Saint?
No.
So are you surprised that he's in at joint 8th, 9th place?
He wasn't in the top 10 because I think there was players more deserving, but one of the turning points of the season for me was when De Vries was beaten by the 40-yarder against Kilmarnock.
Uh-huh.
And Brendan sent Gordon out at half-time to warm up, and my mate said to me, I think he's bringing him on, and I said, don't be so daft. You never bring a goalkeeper on at half-time, no, unless he's injured, and he certainly didn't look injured. His pride looked up more than anything else. And when Gordon ran out for the second half, it was one of those moments that gave me great faith in Brendan Rodgers, because no many managers have got the balls, frankly, to substitute their goalkeeper at half time. And Brendan was very diplomatic at the end of the game by saying that, that De Vries was, I think he said he was sick or something like that. And I don't think that was the case for him. And I just think the thing was that Brendan was being ruthless. And that's something, a ruthless streak is something I admire in him. With regards to Simunovic, I was talking to a guy who works in the hotel that Simunovic was staying in at the time of the Torino carry-on.
Mm-hmm.
He was adamant that Simunovic wanted to stay at Celtic. He didn't really want to go to Torino, but he would have went if he wasn't wanted here. And he was so happy that he stayed, and I think that was reflected in his performances. But I like Simunovic, he's my kind of defender. Again, he's got a ruthless streak. His distribution's good, he reads the game well, he's strong, he's physical. Probably lacks a wee bit of pace in some respects, but like he's got almost everything he would need. Although there is that worrying doubt about injuries. Is there a dodgy knee? Can he play more than two games in a week? Well, he seemed to do okay last season.
Well, we did sort of nurse him through. Because if you remember, he wasn't allowed to play two games a week until we got past the winter break, because Brendan would drop him. Your point about the ruthless streak, we've got the Samaras Award that we'll be discussing later. The Simunovic tackle on Kenny Miller came third in the Samaras Award for the moment.
How could that come third? Seriously? That was one of the highlights of my season. Wonderful.
Well, if you think about it, in all the highlights of the season, and I'll take you through the other two later, and again, the other two partly get back to the point we've discussed about when people vote for any of these things, and you see it in Player of the Year awards from the press and for other things, people's memories tend to be focused on the last 3 months of the season, and the two moments that finish ahead of the Simunovic tackle happened even further on in the season than the Simunovic tackle. So we'll get on to that. So Simunovic, Gordon, Lustig, from what people are saying, a bit of a surprise that they were in that. If I then go to the next three, so in 7th, 6th and 5th place in this order, 7th place Rogic, 6th place Roberts, 5th place Tierney. So, Mark, what's your thoughts?
I have a weakness for Rogic.
The way he accepts a pass in tight space on a half turn is.
He doesn't have fidgety feet.
Sorry?
He doesn't have fidgety feet.
I didn't even say fidgety. You'll have to remember what I said before. Twitchy.
Twitchy feet.
Rogic, he's sometimes the fitness, he doesn't have the fitness of an Armstrong or Brown 3-4 years ago, but sometimes it can also be a wee bit overplayed. Like after the pre-season last summer, he played 90 minutes four times in five games from the end of August to the end of September. He also played 90 minutes away at City, and in the last 15-20 minutes of that game, he was becoming more influential and getting the ball just outside their box and trying to thread passes through. So I think that can be a wee bit overplayed. Also, I thought it was slightly overplayed. I remember it was probably about midway through the Champions League group stage, and people were just slightly criticising Rodgers for not having a great influence on the play. But at the same time, his pass set up Tierney for the goal against City. Mm-hmm. It's a lovely weighted pass. And also, when we were playing pretty badly against Mönchengladbach, but it was still 0-0 with about, I don't know, 5-10 minutes to go until half time. And from 40 yards out, he plays this like 40 yard diagonal pass, which cut open their defence, and it goes to Sinclair about 8 yards from goal at an angle, which Sinclair then, I think he puts it over a bar or something. But in such a low scoring game like football, to have someone that can create those chances, it's so valuable. And also, he scores important goals. Before O'Day put him out for practically half the season, about Christmas time, at that point he'd already scored 10 goals. He scored away, not away, he scored in the final against Aberdeen. And then by the time he had come back and recuperated, he then obviously scored a winner at Aberdeen. He scored a goal against Beersheba in 5-2. So although he isn't yet like running the team, and he's almost kind of like the additional midfielder that can make way for McGregor or before Armstrong, but he is actually, his contribution is actually pretty significant.
So, George, you're a Rogic fan, aren't you?
I do, I think he's great.
It's just something Mark said there about, I'm just looking at the position, that we've got Rogic in 7th and Roberts in 6th. And for me, the interesting thing is Mark's point there, that Rogic was out pretty much from Christmas onwards, and Roberts was only really in the team as a first-choice starter from the Rangers Cup semi-final. Really, because Forrest was keeping him ahead of the team. So what's your thoughts on Rogic, Roberts and then Tierney in those positions? And then, in fact, we're talking about three players, Rogic, Roberts and Tierney, who missed a chunk of the season, because Tierney obviously was out for a few months with his broken ankle.
That's right. Mm-hmm. I think Rogic is probably the cleverest player we've got in terms of his ability to see a pass and make a pass. He doesn't have the same type of thing. Or Armstrong, Brown. I agree with Mark on that. He's, we talked a bit about Riquelme, but I think there's a resemblance to the way Riquelme used to wander a bit of midfield.
Mm-hmm.
It's space on a wee bump of his wing. And I see that sometimes in the way Rodgers plays. He has an eye for a pass that none of the others have. They don't always come off, but he sees them. And when they do come off, they're brilliant. But he's not going to run around 100 miles an hour. It's just not his style of play. And I think if you're going to have him in the team, you have to accept that. I think Paddy Roberts had a tremendous end to the season, and he scored some marvellous goals and made some marvellous runs. But I don't ever think he was going to be staying. I really don't. I think we hoped he would stay, but I couldn't see it. If he wasn't going to go back to Manchester City, he was going to get a big deal somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
More than we can afford.
As you know, we've talked about in this podcast, if other clubs find out that Patrick Roberts can be picked up for 7-8 million quid,
yeah,
clubs in England will pick up a player of Patrick Roberts' ability for 7-8 million quid and pay him 80-90 grand a week.
Exactly, that's the point. And he's already had the Celtic experience, if you want to call that, of playing in a treble winning team and two league championship medals. So he's done that, but and he is English. I mean, we have to accept he only ever came on loan, and that was to get experience and to put himself in the shop window, which he did. Tierney is just Tierney. I don't think I think he's quite unique at the moment in the way he plays, and he seems to have a love for the club that's marked him out as a potential Celtic captain, but we'll see.
Stephen, I was asked this by somebody down south, actually, in relation to Tierney. Why is he so loved by the fans that Blackie just talked about? And I started to write down why he was loved for the fans, and then started to think, I could be describing Callum McGregor as much as I could be describing Kieran Tierney. Yeah. So what is it about Kieran Tierney that's elevated, that you, Callum McGregor gets a wee bit more grief and a wee bit more criticism than him? What do you think, Saint?
I think Callum McGregor was very unlucky. I actually feel very guilty not putting him in my top 10. He was 11th name, and I was toying with whether to have him in or not, and I felt guilty. But again, he was a guy who I felt at the end of the season came onto a game like some of them did, like Roberts did.
Mm-hmm.
But why is Callum McGregor not as popular as Kieran Tierney? It's down to personalities, and one criticism of Celtic fans is that they can be very harsh in guys who are not particularly deserving of it. And I can think back to years and years ago, guys like Harry Hood and Tommy Callaghan used to get a right hard time off the crowd because they weren't the ferocious tacklers, and they didn't put it about the way Davey Hay did or Roy Aitken did. And I think Callum's a wee bit like that. He's a wee bit lightweight at times in midfield. But what I love about Callum McGregor is he's a continental type player. He wouldn't look at a place in Spanish football. He's got that touch, and he can take the ball in tight positions, and he can move it on. So, but I'm digressing here. I'm talking a wee bit too much about McGregor. But the reason why Tierney is loved is, as guys were saying there, it's his commitment, the wholeheartedness, and his talent. He's I don't make this comparison lightly, but he's a left-footed Danny McGrain for me. He's got everything. He tackles, he gets forward, he can cross. He's got a terrific shot in him as well. He's wholehearted. He's a whole package. And with regards to Tierney and Rogic, had it not been for injuries, those two guys would have been much higher up in the placings. And that brings me back to Roberts and Rogic. Roberts, yeah, really, really disappointed to see him go because he's a kind of player. He's my type of player. I just love to watch guys like that. And I do appreciate that it was almost impossible for us to keep him because, as George says there, that he might fancy coming to us, but you know that there's teams down there that are going to give him extravagant amounts of money that we can't afford. I like Tom Rogic as well, and I know what I think it was George was saying there about Riquelme. Rogic reminds me of Trevor Brooken, the West Ham player in the 70s and 80s. He's got that sort of lazy loping stride, but I think that's deceiving. I think he's very much switched on, and again, repeating what some of the guys were saying, he's brilliant at taking the ball in the half turn. That's a wonderful art that's been lost to the game, and I think Rogic is a wonderful exponent of that kind of thing, and he's a thoroughbred footballer.
I think, if I could say something more about Tierney, I think when Tierney came in as a young player, a lot of players come in and they make an immediate impact. He never really let his level drop.
Mm-hmm.
He continued to play with that terrific enthusiasm. He would tackle anybody. You know, the crowd was excited by him. He was run up and down. There were some games I remember when he was really running in empty when he was in his first season or so. But he never stopped trying to run. And I think people appreciate that commitment. Plus the fact he's a very, very good player.
Yeah, I think the thing for me, Mark, with Tierney is he's played at left back. When we've started with a back four and then switched to a three, he's moved into a winger role. We've also started games with a back three where he's been one of the three. Mm-hmm. So patently, yep, the management trust him as a footballer to play in across that whole section.
Yeah, it's quite interesting. I think Rogers either this morning or yesterday was talking about Tierney as being a centre-back for, mm-hmm, Scotland, which is quite interesting. Also, we'll get on to Sinclair later on in the podcast, I assume, but...
What makes you think
because
that? He's number 11.
unless it's Brown and De Vries as a 1 and 2. The fact that
Sinclair's a kind of strange, he's an atypical player. He's a kind of strange, he's nominally our kind of high left player, but it's not like he gets it like Roberts or Forrest and he kind of generates play from there. He kind of, Tierney's more actually in that position. And Sinclair kind of moves inside and then becomes like the second striker when as we're kind of advancing up the pitch. So Tierney's actually, although we're talking about him being a left back, most of the time when he has the ball, he's in the opposition half.
Yeah.
So he's more kind of like, he's almost playing, yeah, not exactly, but he's almost playing on the same kind of, he receives the ball at about the same area of the pitch as Alan Thompson would have done in a 4-4-2. And yeah, he's obviously an excellent player. He's obviously a pretty complete player. I think I'd quite like him, I'd like him to improve his right foot a wee bit when he's in those tight situations. Like the game at Barcelona is obviously a pretty harsh kind of thing to pick up when there's two or three Barcelona players kind of being down on you. But it was a part of his game that I thought, ah, he does have a flaw. He can improve something. But, you know, at the same time, we're talking about a boy who turned 20 the other week. So we kind of look at Tierney as always, you know, he's been playing with us for like 5 years or something, and he's in his mid-20s. Is something I really like, and I'm sure everyone's picked up on it, are these these drilled low cutbacks when he gets on to like near the byline. And they're so effective for either Rogic coming in or Sinclair coming in to hit it first time. That's about it.
I know you're a fan. I know you're a fan of Scott Sinclair. And when I was speaking to the guy this past week, he was asking me about Tierney. One of the things was the point Mark made there that I said some of Tierney's best games have been with Sinclair in the team, because Sinclair cuts inside to almost become our second striker and leaves Tierney to be a winger in that scenario. So do you think Tierney has helped make Scott Sinclair's performances at Celtic?
I think the two of them have got a good relationship in the field. They link very well together, and certainly there was games, the two of them on the left hand side were a very potent threat. But the one thing I'd like to say is that Tierney did get injured for a while, and I think Izzy Gerry deserves great credit, because he came into the team cold, and he, because of his experience and his ability, the team were able to carry on regardless, and so that Tierney wasn't really missed. I don't mean that in I don't want him back in the team. He's a better bet than Izzy Gerry, clearly. But the point I'm making is that when Izzy Gerry came into the team, he in turn provided a high performance level. And I think that was something that we should be very grateful for, that he was able to come in and basically Tierney wasn't missed to the degree that he might have been otherwise.
You're nodding your head there, Lackey.
Well, two things. I thought when he came into the team at first, because he was a young guy, other teams targeted him. And that I know that the incident in the cup final, the guys just sort of slapped back at him. But in the league match at Pittodrie, they tried putting that big guy up against him and firing cross balls at him. And that was a piece of his early games in the team. They put the big striker on him to try and expose his lack of physical development, because he was just a boy. But I think as he's getting stronger, he's coping better with that. So in order to get the better of him physically, you've got to foul him now, whereas I think you could just overpower him in the past. But I agree a bit with Steve. I think that I thought Izzy Gerry was terrific. I love Izzy Gerry. I think he's a brilliant player, and I feel really sorry that the guy, in order to get his place in the team, he's had to put a really good player out of the team. Whereas on the other side, and Izzy Gerry playing right back and the Tierney playing left back of that quality, the team would be better balanced, because I'm not sure that Lustig is as good a player as Ezegeri.
I'm not sure. I mean, for me, the problem for Ezegeri was he wasn't a great defender, because he plays as winger for Honduras half the time, and then his final cross ball wasn't that great.
I don't know. I think his distribution was pretty good, but he wasn't a bad defender. I mean, he played for how many seasons did he play? He was the first choice.
Oh, I know. I just if I think back to some key games where we've lost. And this is where I would say why Tierney's in the team ahead of him. If I think of one or two key games that we've lost, it's because we've been on the counter attack. Ezegeri's not had the ability to come back and cover, and Kieran does.
In football terms, I think he's still on the floor. I actually wonder sometimes why we didn't play them both.
As of all the four fullbacks we have, I think Ezegeri is actually the best in terms of receiving the ball in tight situations, like on the touchline, maybe on a halfway line, under pressure in European games. I think he actually holds on to the ball quite well and won't kind of give up an easy kind of... Maybe his passing won't be kind of, you know, incredibly ambitious, but he'll receive the ball under pressure and he'll be able to manipulate the ball and then be able to give it back to the centre-back or inside to the midfielder. And it isn't like he's creating anything, but he's keeping the move going in a way that I think Lustig can maybe be a little bit susceptible to giving over, like a turnover of a ball. But they're completely different players, obviously. Like, we all know, like, the attributes that Lustig has is he doesn't have, and vice versa.
So, without just wanting to sound negative, but people move on from our club, those three, Roberts, Rogic, and then Roberts, and then Tierney. Well, we know that Roberts is gone. Saint, can you see anyone coming in for Rogic? There's been a lot of talk of people coming in for Tierney. Do you think we'll manage to keep Tierney for a period of time?
I don't think he's a problem with Tierney, because I think his heart's here, and I think if he is going to move on, he's a clever enough boy to realise that if he sticks about here for another 2 or 3 years, it'll help his development. He'll get to play European football, he'll become an internationalist. So ideally, by the age of 23 or so, if he does want to move, and I hope he doesn't, he will be ready to move on. I'm not sure about anybody coming in for Rogic. I think if it'd be more a case of Brendan wanted to sacrifice Rogic to bring in a better class of player. I think Rogic is quite settled here. I don't have any inclination that Rogic would be for the off.
You don't think if a team came in this summer for Tierney and it was the stature of a top six team in the EPL, so therefore he'd be getting offered $100,000 a week, you think he'd turn that down?
Well, no, that would be very difficult for it. It would be head turning for any individual, but we need to be careful here, because I still think Dembele will go in the summer. I think the first good big offer they get for him, he'll be off. I've given up hope with Armstrong. I actually feel that he'll be leaving as well because of the contract situation. You've lost Roberts, and then you're already talking about Tierney and Rogic. I mean, like, we need to sort of draw a line here, you know.
I'm just asking because the problem we face is the money kicking about in the English Premiership. Mm-hmm. Players who would struggle to get in our team are changing hands in excess of £10 million and getting wages of upwards of $80,000-$90,000 a week.
Mm-hmm. I know, I appreciate that, and that's the pitfalls, but I really don't think Tierney's ready to go to one of the big teams in England yet, and I say that with the greatest respect, because I think he's phenomenal. But I do think that if he's a clever enough boy for a good family background, that he'll stick about here for 2 or 3 years and really make his mark, and then he'll be ready to go anywhere.
I agree. Sorry, go on, George.
If he continues to develop over the next couple of years, he might not just go to a top six team, he might go to a top team. You know, his progress over the last 2 years has been pretty remarkable. And if he continues to develop, if Celtic do qualify for the Champions League over the next couple of years and he makes progress under Brendan Rodgers, he would be a really good pick for a top team, not necessarily in England.
Mark, Rogic, yep. And Tierney.
I completely agree with both Saint and Lackey there. And just one regarding Tierney, just one thing about Rogic is that I could see a lot of teams being interested in Rogic, especially watching Australia in a Confederations Cup, and they see this 23, 24 year old kid who's 6'2", lovely touch, scored against Germany. I think did he win the penalty against Germany as well?
He scored a penalty against Saudi Arabia.
Yeah. And I could see a lot of teams being interested in him, but not from England.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so you might be talking about, say, Simunovic, for example. Simunovic, a lot of English teams could be interested in him after one more season, does well in the Champions League again, and then you might be talking something like £15 million for a 23-year-old centre-back, 2 years in the Champions League, strong. Whereas Rodric, I could see a Spanish team coming for him. I could see maybe an Italian team. And they, like,
it looks to me like he makes out French football as well.
Yeah, yeah. But they're going to offer, €4 million? Something like that. That's the thing. And then you have to make a calculation. Okay, he might not even be a regular starter, like a definite starter, but for €4 million, for a guy who can score, if he's fit the whole season, who will score 15 plus goals, who's maturing, who, you know, is very creative, it's kind of, for me, it wouldn't be worth it.
I remember you and I were on a podcast when he came back from Australia, and I mentioned he was back.
Mm-hmm.
You were astonished that he was back. I read it in the paper. And I remember at the time when Ronnie Dyer saw him, he said he is a brilliant player. Now, he didn't say that about many guys. This guy just arrived back from Australia, and his response was, he is a brilliant player. And I think Roger thinks he's a brilliant player.
Yeah.
There's one thing about what Roger said. At some point during the season, he gave kind of apropos of nothing after a game, after some league game. He said to the press guys, "The most important thing that I've learned in football is to limit space when you don't have the ball." And that's something that would be the drawback on Rodric, obviously.
Mm-hmm. So hopefully we will keep hold of them. It's just, it's one of these things that's a compliment to our squad that we're the only team. It's amazing how a £6 million guy at Christmas has just changed hands for £500,000, but we're the only team with several players in Scottish football. And it gets talked about. So if we then move, if I go through, 5th place Tierney, 6th place Roberts, 7th place Rodric, joint 8th place Simunovic and Gordon, and then 10th place Lustig. So I'm going to go to 3rd and 4th place. You guys know this. What you guys don't know is who's in 1st and 2nd. So 3rd and 4th place are 4th place Moussa Dembele, 3rd place Armstrong. So same. That's not a million miles away from where you had them. So talk me through them.
Okay, Dembele. I wasn't sure what kind of player Dembele even was when we signed him, to be honest. I hadn't seen anything of him. And my first couple of glimpses of them, I wasn't that impressed. And then he came in fire against Rangers and became, he'll be a legend spoken about for years. He's got everything Dembele. He's a big strong boy, he's got pace, he's got a shot, he can finish, he's got good control, but and yet the one thing I think, and I hope I'm not being overcritical here, is He will turn up in the cup final, he will turn up in the Rangers games, he will turn up in the European games, but I wasn't convinced he was putting in a full shift when we were playing Ross County and St Johnson. I just felt like some of the times he could have given us more. I'm not saying he wasn't trying, I'm not saying that for a minute, but I do think he's a big game player and he rises to the big occasions, and maybe in a cold January day at McDermott Park or a similar place, he isn't the same threat he would be otherwise. But I do think, as I said previously, that the first big offer, maybe not the first big offer, but certainly a big offer, he will be off in the summer. I don't doubt it for a minute.
George?
Well, I don't know. I don't know if he'll be in the summer. I'll wait and see. I think that when he came in first, like Stephen, I was over impressed when I thought he carried a lot of that weight when he arrived at first. But he settled into the team and he got into the team eventually. He scored more goals against these street teams than you think. He scored goals against St Johnstone at McDermott Park. He scored goals at Ross County, I think, in places like that. So he maybe looked a wee bit kind of as if he was putting in a full shift. But when the chances came along, he picked most of them away. I still think that Griffith was unfairly compared to Dembele in terms of folk would say that he didn't recycle the ball as well as Dembele. The ball didn't stick to him the way it stuck to Dembele. As far as I was concerned, there were six and a half a dozen. Because I think Griffith was greatly underrated, maybe because he was a wee Ned for Scotland and he wasn't an exotic potential £50 million player. But I would like to keep them both because I think they're both in good strength.
Well, I think one of Griffiths' problems is he sees himself as a striker and strikers score goals. Uh-huh. And his problem sometimes is once he gets to 60 minutes in a game, if he hasn't scored a goal, he then starts to shoot on sight instead of pass the ball. And I think he's been tried to be. I think the coaching staff are trying to persuade him that that's not necessary, but he's maybe not taking that on board.
I was interested in Brendan's comments last week on the radio. Well, Celtic TV, I think. They asked him about Griffiths in the international, and he put the goals to one side, and he talked about his performance. He said he thought he was brilliant against England. He said everything that you want your striker to do, he did, to a very, very high level. And he says the goals were the icing on the cake. And I think your point is true. I think we need to persuade Lee Griffiths that the goals are the icing on the cake. And the goals
were... Maybe controversial here. I actually think that Lee Griffiths is a better all-round finisher than Dembele.
I think Dembele's a better all-round player. Which is why Dembele, whenever he goes, will be a £40 million player.
Well, I mean, I hadn't seen anything that made him so much better than Griffiths that he would be a £40 million player.
I think Griffiths' performance against England was superb. And I was pretty pleased when I was watching that interview that you mentioned there with Rodgers out in Austria, and he was discussing his performance, the way he occupied Smalling and Cahill, he completely dominated them. Mm-hmm. And like he was going for like headers, and maybe they were winning the header, but he's then anticipating the loose ball and he's picking up a loose ball and then playing like quick layoffs onto our midfielders. He was exceptional that day, apart from those two excellent free kicks. But I still think that Dembele, his hold up play on a regular basis, I think it's quite a bit better. I think the game at Ibrox, the Rangers game,
the ball's still in the corner flag.
I was watching your eyes go there. The Rangers derby El Clasico. he was exceptional in the New Year derby. He really was. He completely dominated their defence. And I think Saint's right in that he's a big game player,
and he was perhaps more motivated for big games. But at the same time, when I'm thinking about player of the season, I weight the big games more than when we're playing Hamilton away. Mm-hmm. When, like, the players who made the difference, like, I had Dembele at number two because of that. Because if you think about how many games is it, the six games we played against Rangers, the six games we played against Aberdeen, the four we played against Hearts, 4-5, and then six group stage, and then the qualifiers. You're getting to about 20 games that are the important games of the season. And in those 20 or so games, Dembele was excellent. Dembele, for four games of those six, dominated Rangers. Mm-hmm. He scored two at home to City. Mm-hmm. He was excellent away at Mönchengladbach.
You, the three of the people on this podcast had Dembele at number two. Lucky. So, you didn't, you had him a bit further down. What about Armstrong? Because 12 to 9 months ago, no one would have believed that Armstrong would finish as voted in at the number 3 by over 200 people who emailed in. No one would have thought that Armstrong would finish third.
Well, I think my reaction to Armstrong was that I was disappointed that he hadn't prospered when he was in the previous season, and it was curious to see how he did. He actually figured, I don't think, too much at the beginning of the season. I think it was after a few games that he and the manager seemed to come sort of understanding as to where he would play. But he plays with tremendous energy, but he's still capable of having games where the passes are rushed and he seems to lack a wee bit of confidence. But overall, through the season, he was one of the most effective players we had. And towards the end of the season, he was clearly playing at a much higher level than he did last season. But he came to us with a great reputation as a player on the rise. I mean, they paid decent money for him by Scottish standards. I was surprised when they bought him. I didn't get any sense before he came to us that Celtic were a club he would come to. Mm-hmm. So when he did come, I was quite pleased. I was impressed with his attitude. But I think he's one of these guys who, maybe we touched on Brian McClare about him. Again, another guy who's cerebral, graduate type guy, who maybe has a bigger picture of his career than just playing for the Celtic. And it concerned me that he didn't get his contract tied up. And at the moment, the club's sniffing around. And I remember last year you told us about the difference in salary that even Southampton were prepared to play Virgil.
Yeah.
To what we were paying him. And I have a feeling that the agent, maybe, we'll wait and see how persuasive the manager can be to get him to sign another contract, stay another year or two, and then perhaps again we want a bigger club. I'm not sure it would be the best thing for Armstrong to leave Celtic. I don't think he's yet a consistently great player.
Problem is, though, if he signs a 2-3 year contract now at Celtic, well, unless somebody comes in with a really big bid, then his opportunity to get that huge payday might be gone, because he'll be, what, 28, 29 at the end of this contract?
Is he that old? I wasn't sure what age he was.
Yeah, I think he's, what, 25?
I think he's 25 now.
Yeah, so if he signed a 3-year deal, that's 28 for the move. But saying it's a challenge for the club, because this time last year, they probably couldn't give him away. And so the concept of offering a bumper contract this time last year was probably furthest from their minds. You've mentioned that you think he just might be gone and we're not going to keep him. But again, put the same thing to you, this time last year, you wouldn't have been thinking he'd be third in our top 10, would you?
I think it's curious that they've brought in what's his name, Kolasie, is it?
Uh huh.
Mm. And now brought in another young midfield player, and they appear to be prepared to spend big money on the boy for Chelsea, who, as far as I can see, is a midfield player, a lock picker. So I have the feeling that they may be on the radar that he's going.
See?
They certainly don't need new midfield players if they keep them.
I don't doubt for a minute that Armstrong is going to go. I think that the contract things went too far now, and there was talk about him signing, and he didn't, and it hasn't happened. So I'd be really disappointed to lose him, because I think he's turning into a fantastic player. And I think, as well as the goal scoring threat and the runs for midfield, which are, he reminds me very much of Stylian Petrov in that respect. He's cool in the penalty area, he places the ball into the net, he's very rarely hurries, he's got great composure. But the, you know, my abiding feeling with Stuart Armstrong is it's the Ronnie Dyla syndrome, but when Ronnie played him out wide in the left, and he was like a fish out of water. And but with it being condescending to Ronnie, I think it was an indication of how Ronnie was trying things, it just weren't working. And as soon as Brendan saw Stuart Armstrong, he thought to himself, central midfield player attacking through the middle, which everybody knew, every Celtic fan knew that Stuart Armstrong was a central midfield player, apart from Ronnie Taylor. So it annoys me a wee bit that we ruined him for a couple of seasons under Ronnie, and we never saw his best. And now when we are seeing his best, and he's just about to become his best, we're going to need to move him on. And I think what George said there is very significant. The Kolasie guy's in, the new boy's in for Ipswich, there's talk about the Chelsea guy, you know, and we've already got Rogic and Armstrong and you know, various other midfield players. So reading between the lines, Armstrong's off.
So I'll pause there on our top 10. So we've got Armstrong, Dembele, Tierney, Roberts, Rogic, Simonovic, Gordon, Lustig. And I'll go on to the Samaras Award. So I've already mentioned that in third place was the Simonovic tackle. In second place was Tierney lifting the cup. And the... by far the main, it was interesting actually, because as the votes came in, this wasn't the first of 20 votes that came in, this was only mentioned by a couple of people, and then all of a sudden everybody else voted, and this then started to flood the betting. And Mark, would this have been, this wasn't your moment of the season, but it was most people's moment of the season. It wasn't my moment of the season. It wasn't my moment of the season, actually, either. And I mean that only because I was, because it was an element of it, it was too obvious. It's Rogic's goal in the cup final. But then you were busy trying to explain to an Australian female who was occupying other attentions of yours at the time, the offside rule. And so, yes, exactly. So, it might not have been forefront of your mind, the Rogic goal at that time, but it was a good moment, wasn't it?
What do you want me to say? Yeah, it was great. It was great. I'm the worst person to ask for this.
Lackey.
I'm the worst person.
He wasn't paying attention to the cup final goal. Rogic getting the winner. Well, best moment of the season. You put it down as the best moment of the season.
Well, I ain't going out. I couldn't cope with it.
Like, so there's two people on this podcast who haven't seen it.
So I came back, and as I left the car, and between the car and the house, and I opened the front door, I heard this tremendous cheer from the telly. And I thought, oh no, what's happened? And I heard him saying, Rogic. I said, oh, you beauty. So now I've watched about 100 times since then. In fact, periodically, I just put it on and watched the last 20 minutes again.
I mean, actually, see, there's an element of me thinking that my moment of the season was not something that I saw in the flesh. My moment of the season could also be classed as that fantastic camera shot from behind Gordon, as the Rogic goal goes in the back of the net, because for me it just encapsulates everything about football in one 3-4 second camera pan.
Just to say, just you remember this, Stephen. Do you remember when they scored the winner against Dundee United? And it was a minute to go or something like that, and McGarvey scored. And Dundee United had a last throw of the dice, firing the ball into the box. I think Pierce O'Leary booted up all over the bar, remember? The same thing happened really then. Having won the game, they nearly threw it away in the very last second, and the goalkeeper actually make a save.
I think Aberdeen deserve credit for that, because they swung a great ball into the box, and the Celtic defenders hesitated, and Gordon almost with good fortune managed to just pounce on it. So George makes a good point there about Dundee United, but I would say the other final, because it reminded me very much of the Frank McAvenny final. You were coming to the end of the centenary season. It's such a special season. It's such a significant season. And you know, to get a late winner in the cup final is phenomenal. And you know, but there was so much at stake at the cup final there. You had the unbeaten record, you had the treble at stake, and if they had lost it, it sounds terrible to say it, but it would have left a bad taste through the summer, and would have been such a big anticlimax. But not only to win it, but to win it in such dramatic circumstances is just absolutely beyond belief. And Rogic deserves great credit, because he was getting in his stride and he kept on going and he kept on going, and it was a phenomenal finish.
I remember in the podcast before the cup final, we were talking, and we were saying that it would be good if Aberdeen actually turned up.
Yes.
I digressed into a kind of rant about, you know, the middle-sized teams in Scottish football becoming better.
But the fact, as Saint says, the fact that Aberdeen turned up and they deserved credit, like, it was a properly competitive game. And that really, that obviously adds to that moment that everything's on the line, it's the last minute, and then Rogic picks up the ball, waltzes through like three players, puts it in a net. It's fantastic, but it was kind of because of Aberdeen's good performance for about 55-60 minutes.
Which I suppose is part of the great frustration for me as someone who I think it will only enhance Celtic if the rest of Scottish football improve their position. The utter contempt that one other Glasgow club and parts of the media have for our game, that the only ever, and the president of the SFA has for our game, that what would make our game better is if the team who I expect to finish somewhat, I expect to finish behind Aberdeen, behind Hearts, and possibly behind Hibs this season. I expect the second best team in Glasgow to finish fifth or fourth at best this coming season. Yeah, Aberdeen have been bypassed in the chat, and oh, whoop-de-doo, let's have a great Rangers. I think it's very patronising. The points you've just made about it was Aberdeen that made that cup final.
To put it in context, if it wasn't for Celtic, Aberdeen had won a treble. Because they came second in every competition, and I think that that's a remarkable achievement, given the fact that Celtic were so good last season. It wasn't the fact that Aberdeen were particularly poor for finishing second. They deserve a lot of credit for going the whole way and pushing, especially in the Scottish Cup final. Agreed that they never really turned up in the League Cup final. It was very, very one-sided, and I suppose you could argue that Celtic ran away with the league. But nevertheless, for Aberdeen's resources, I think they had a really good season, and I think that they should be proud of what they achieved, although they ultimately they never get any cups.
I've found in recent years that when Celtic, you're obviously disappointed when Celtic get beaten a cup final or a semi-final or even in an earlier round, but once you go over the disappointment, I personally start supporting the other teams. I start taking an interest in what Aberdeen were doing, Ross County were doing, and Inverness Carrie Thistle when they were in the semi-final and the final. I'd watch the games and I'd actively want them to do well. Once the Celtic are out of the equation, I think Scottish football is interesting. I think it's enjoyable. And I really would like, as you say, the other teams to get better.
Mm-hmm. The thing you're saying there, George, and I agree with, but I'm going to back you up here in this respect. In the 4 years that Rangers were at the league, the 4 years Rangers were in the lower divisions, when they were starting off again, this was a boom time for football. You were teams like St Johnstone winning a cup, St Mirren winning a cup, Ross County, Inverness, Kilmarnock. Now, some of that was at our expense, but I think we can be magnanimous enough to live with that, because we have to appreciate that the Celtic fans were going to get a lot of enjoyment and we're going to get a lot of success. So you can't hold it against small teams if they beat us. And I think it really annoys me about the press not speaking up the success of the smaller teams in Scotland during that period, and seeing how good that was for the game, that the trophies were spread more evenly. Certainly in the cup competitions, we ran away with the league. But it goes to prove as well how Rangers financially doped the league, because they were winning a lot of these trophies in a 3 or 4 year period that other clubs might have won otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
It shows how hard it is to win a treble. You kept on that several years running about how difficult it is to win a treble.
Mm-hmm.
But this year was remarkable, so it was.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So that's that. So we now have.
I was really disappointed that St Johnstone got beat tonight. They get beat 1-0.
They behaved like the rest of Scottish football does every season and has done for the last 25 years. Like, it starts to bug me now when people talk about, when you hear the press talking about, for the last 5 or 6 years, it has been for the last 20 years.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
It is 20 years of garbage.
Or more.
Or, I know, just more.
I was speaking to an English friend today, and I know we're going to go on to the last two, but I was speaking to an English friend today, and I said 20 years as well, and then I had to think back, no, it's actually about 30 years now.
It's nearly 30, yeah.
And another thing, I'm digressing again here, but yesterday I was looking at Aberdeen's accounts, and their wage budget is 6.8 million. And then the first team I looked at was AIK Stockholm.
Mm-hmm.
And their wage budget is 6.1 million a year. And that's a club they've sold two players to Real Madrid in the last 5 years. They sold players to Besiktas and, a few others across Europe, even one to us. Our medium-sized clubs are about the same level as, okay, Malmo have Champions League money for us in the last kind of 4 years or something. They've qualified once or twice, so they're a bit different. But the fact that Hibs were beaten, 7-0 at home a few years ago, yeah, by Malmo before they got into Champions League, they're at the same level financially.
Mm-hmm.
We should be competing at the same level as, the smaller Swiss clubs, the bigger Swedish clubs.
My big bugbear is when you hear them say things like, of course, that's because they're technically better than us. Why? There is zero reason why they should be technically better than us. Zero.
Especially when you think that, I know it's a long time ago, but during that sort of golden period of the 60s, when there were really good, strong Scottish teams and great Scottish players, you would go and play an Icelandic team or a Dutch team even and horse them. Mm-hmm. So why did they suddenly become better than us?
Well, it's another reason for me why Stuart Regan's position at the head of the SFA is untenable. Because actually, much as we're talking about this, and it's been bad for 25 plus years, the coefficient of the national side and their club size has deteriorated during his reign when he's in charge of the Football Association of Scotland. Mm-hmm. So he's done nothing to enhance it. The simple thing is, for me, whatever we have been doing for the last 15 years, scrap it. If we've tried three different ways in the last 15, 20 years, scrap it, because whatever we're doing doesn't work.
Well, it's interesting. They lost on foreign coach, and then they lost McClare very quickly after it. So obviously they've gone in there and thought, something's rotten in the state of Denmark.
Just one thing is that Celtic are actually doing quite well. Scottish football, you know how we changed our model to incorporate St Ninians, and the players are within the school and they also train at the same time all together. It's interesting that, well, Tierney and McGregor have been through Celtic systems since they're 9 years old.
And it seems as though, obviously, the kid Dembele and Johnson, for me, looks a decent young player. Aitchison looks like a decent young player. They're coming through the same system. So hopefully, at least for us, we are now beginning to produce players again.
I've been told to expect that Ralston and Aitchison by this time next season might have played 10 games each. And Ralston in particular, maybe more.
I often go to see Queen of the South, so I see these other teams that come to play Queen of the South, and every other week there's a former Celtic Youth Academy player playing for one or other of the teams. And they're invariably the best players in those teams. They might not be good enough to play for the Celtic, but they're stick-outs in the other teams.
Mm-hmm.
And it's throughout the league.
So that's that, and we'll get on to my final question that I did last year as well, and I can't remember what people's answers are, so it's a bit of a waste of time me asking it, but anyway, and so you can give this some thought before we get into the top two of who you think might be a star in next season's top 10. But obviously the top two will consist of two Scots, Scott Sinclair and Scott Brown, so I'm very quickly going to ask in each of you in order. So, Lackey, which one, which way round? Scott Sinclair, Scott Brown, which way round do you think it's going to be?
Scott Brown the first for me.
Mark?
Brown has to win.
Saint?
Dear God Almighty, Sinclair doesn't win this, then we should just wrap it up.
No.
Well, my own personal thoughts are that I think Sinclair's position is an indication of how, if you're the penalty kick taker, people forget when you've had a bad game, because you put the ball in the back of the net sometimes when you've not played well and you get some goals. However, nobody is correct and everybody is right, because we have a tie for the Celtic Underground top 10. Scott Sinclair and Scott Brown are tied for joint first place with over 200 after over 200 votes. Where the way that I did it is a bit like single transferable vote. If somebody was first, they get 10 points. If somebody was second, they get 9 points. If somebody was third, they get 8 points. And everybody's top 10, tallied them all up. And as I got into the last couple of votes, it was neck and neck as I was tallying them up. And then I counted them, and it was a tie.
Same. Where did you have Brown? Can you remember?
Off the top of my head, it was fourth.
terrible.
Brown fourth place for Saint.
There you go.
Lackey, do you remember where you had Brown?
No.
Hold on, I'll tell you. I'm looking through. I can't find you when I'm looking for you. Not there. You had Brown, Lackey. You have Brown in first place.
Aye.
You have Brown, Armstrong, Sinclair. I had Brown, Dembele, Armstrong, Sinclair. Mark, you had
Brown, Dembele, Sinclair.
Yeah.
You know some things.
So we had Brown a wee bit behind. So Saint, do you want to explain why you think it's a travesty that Sinclair's not run away with it, and why we're wrong and you're right? Go on and explain.
This is why Scott Sinclair should have won it. For the first time in years, the first few games that he played, I found myself sitting on the edge of my seat, because every time he got the ball, I thought, whoa, he's going to do something here. His trickery, his pace, the finishing, he carries a threat. He even drops off deep, and he can hold the ball well. Guys are frightened to come near him, because he has got that burst of pace to get by them. So they stand off him. he made a brilliant contribution right for the beginning for the day at Tynecastle, but where he streaked through the middle to get the goal. But the other reason why I think he was player of the year is that there was a wee period that I thought we were going to struggle round about Christmas when Dembele got injured and then Griffiths got injured, and Scott Sinclair took on the mantle of goal scorer. He took on he played as the striker up front, but this isn't his normal game. And he was, in my eyes, he was really good at it. He carried the team in that respect for a few weeks until the team found their feet again and we get Dembele or Griffiths back to allow Sinclair to go back to playing slightly on the left-hand side. And I just think he is by far the best player in Scotland. It's kind of interesting that there's a guy in my work, he's a Rangers fan, he's a good guy, and he's very... He's quite a deep thinker in the game, and he said to me in the early months of the season, he says, "What a signing Sinclair is." And I said, "What do you mean?" He says, "See, when you buy quality like that at our level, it stands out a mile, and that's money well spent to Scott Sinclair." Another thing as well is that he is a player that the fans have taken to, and he's a blue chip signing in the respect that he is a class act. He could play for most of the teams in the English Premiership. In fact, he's been at Chelsea, he's been at Man City, he's been at Swansea, he's been about the place, and I have no doubt in my eyes that he was Celtic's best player last year. But I will say kind words on Scott Brown as well, and one of the moments of the season for me was the drop ball against Joey Barton when we played Rangers in September, and Brown went right through him, and I think that spoke volumes for Scott Brown.
So, Mark, St has eloquently put the case for Sinclair just edging above Brown. So do you want to explain why he's wrong and you are right, and it's Brown who should be in first place?
Well, firstly, I basically agree with St that Sinclair offers Celtic something we don't have. And it's like Gil Scott-Heron, it's like that arrow where he gets the ball and he just drives straight at goal. And the really impressive thing about that I found was that when he did it away at Barcelona about four times and they couldn't get the ball off him. He was an excellent outlet away in Germany. And when we were on a counter-attack and he would just like carry the ball about 40 yards up the pitch. And so that's going to be really, hopefully Dembele stays for next season, and it'll be really interesting to see those two on the break, like what happened at Ibrox for the New Year game, that those two are making combinations as we're breaking up the pitch. Be really good. For Brown for me was comfortably the best player. As I seen before with Dembele, why Dembele was my number two, that say we play 60 games a season, more or less, and you take the Rangers games, the Hearts games, the Aberdeen games, you take the qualifiers and the group stage games, so you get to about 20 games. Of those 20 games, Scott Brown, I'd be surprised if anyone would disagree that Scott Brown wasn't the best player in those 20 games. For instance, in the Champions League, he covered 70,000 metres. He was amongst the top five midfielders for covering ground.
Mm-hmm.
He made the most out of every single Champions League player in the group stage. He made the most interceptions.
Mm-hmm.
For any midfielder in the group stage, Scott of who had more than 200 passes, so basically excluding the players who played, you know, like one or two games, yeah, or something, he had a 96% pass completion. It was the highest of any midfielder who completed more than 200 passes, according to UEFA. And this is for Celtic. This isn't for Barcelona, where they have 10 different options to pass, mm-hmm, to all the time, circulating around the pitch. This is us under pressure when Barcelona and Guardiola City are trying to close him down, and he kept the ball. As I said to you before, when in a previous podcast, when we were playing City away, in the last group stage game.
The Argentinian co-commentator on Fox Sports says, "For me, Brown's been one of the best players in the Champions League this year. Watch him, he doesn't lose the ball." And he was right. Brown was exceptional for us in the Champions League, and especially the first 6 months to get us into the Champions League and then to have a fairly decent showing in the Champions League was mostly down to Brown. And although I don't want to, you know, overly criticise Sinclair, and I thought he had an excellent season and I had him as my number three of the season, he didn't score in the Champions League. Even Brown got a goal against Beersheba.
Yeah.
So, for contribution in the biggest games, I think Brown was comfortably our best player. And, you know, for me, playing against Barcelona or Mönchengladbach away, that has more weight for me than, you know, five games against Hamilton and Inverness and whatever. They're the games that really define our season.
I think the thing that Sinclair brings to the table is Celtic should always have a personality player. There should always be a player there who the fans take to, who sing a special song, and obviously he's got that special song now. And he reminds me very much of Hendrick in the sense that when Hendrick had the dreadlocks and he was a very identifiable player on the pitch, and you see Sinclair with a mad haircut, and he is a very identifiable player on the pitch. So he represents a personality in the team which the fans have taken to their heart, and I think that's important because I don't think we've had that for a number of years. I think he has a very close relationship with the supporters, and I'm hopeful that that's something that's going to increase in the seasons ahead.
Lackey, your thoughts on Brown?
I accept what Stephen says about that. There's a dynamic element to the way he plays, the way he runs at teams, and he promises much. But I used to write articles about guys who were great goal scorers, as opposed to guys who were scorers of great goals. And I think he falls into the latter category, because I think he misses a lot of easy chances.
Mm-hmm.
And even this week, watching the friendly games, he missed a sitter against that team the other night that I could have scored. You know, and I think he does that more often, not more often than not, but more than you would expect for a player of his ability. But he scores terrific goals. And I found him at times frustrating, because the guys who make these dynamic runs don't always complete them. And so I accept he was a key player for his last season, but I think Mark's right. I think his contribution has to be measured against other factors. And as far as him being a fan's favourite, he's no more a fan's favourite to my mind than Lee Griffiths.
Listen, what I meant to say there was that the fact that the supporters have got a very distinctive song in his favour.
Oh, come on, he's not winning because of a song. Come on.
Honestly, God.
I can't even quote a song.
Quite tightly. What I'm trying to say is, I still can't think of the word for that song.
What is it they sing? I don't know what the song
Harry,
is.
Do you want to sing it?
It is... To the God, Supertramps.
Supertramps.
Scotty Sinclair, and he
go
is
on,
so
sing
wonderful.
Sing it.
I'll do that later.
But the point I'm going to make here, I'm going to make a wee bit a humorous point, but I'm serious at the same time. Scott Sinclair is the kind of player I thought Aidan McGeady should have been. An early Aidan McGeady, when I saw him, and I thought, this boy's got so much potential here, but it never materialised. Whereas Scott Sinclair, to me, is a player that I hoped that Aidan might have been for us. But I know, you know, I'm pulling Harry's leg here to a certain degree, but I'm serious the point I make, because McGeady could have been something if he had have moved up the levels that we all hoped. But I look at Scott Sinclair and the position he plays on the left hand side, cutting into his right foot. And that was very much the position that McGeady held in the team at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Sinclair had an excellent season last season. He was, the way he carries the ball, he offers something different. He's so quick, he's dynamic. When he's running at pace, he keeps the ball so close to himself. And as he says, he's clinical. His finishing, like, for a player carrying a ball, I actually think his finishing is very good. Like, if you think about the goal away at Inverness, for example, as we break at pace, as he goes onto our right foot, I think he's very good. He's very good. But at the same time, if you look at the European games, he carried the ball well away, but at home he missed a very good chance at 0-0 against Mönchengladbach, and in what, seven appearances I think he had in the qualifiers and in the group games, he didn't score.
Well, the comparison that Hamida made for Sinclair was he was like Bellamy more than Henrik Larsson. I'm glad that the comparison with Henrik Larsson was about his hairdo, because he just didn't begin to come into the same galaxy as Henrik Larsson in terms of ability.
Well, but let me come in there, George, just to say that
very, very like Bellamy in the way he would carry the ball and score brilliant goals.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Let me come in here just to make the point that Sinclair had a far better first season than Henrik Larsson had.
Not at all. No, he might
first
have a
season.
He might have had a better first game. He
first season.
Go back and watch the videos.
The first season, Henrik was nowhere near the player he became.
That's different. But Henrik Larsson was brilliant in that first season. Absolutely brilliant. He went on to be a superstar. But he was, apart from that first game, he was absolutely brilliant. Go back and watch that video of the year he stopped at 10. Henrik Larsson was there every week, scoring goal after goal. Well, no buy that one. No taking that one.
We're supposed to be talking up the team, not falling out about whether Henrik Larsson's first season was...
I do accept he's a very good player, but he is no Henrik Larsson. And you can't say that he was better in his first season than Henrik, because he wasn't. His first game he was.
Right, okay. Henrik's goal return the first season was actually, by his standards, quite average. He only scored 18 goals. Scott Sinclair got, how many did he get? 26?
How many penalties did Scott Sinclair score?
Henrik made loads of goals. Henrik terrorised his defences.
How many penalties did Scott Sinclair score last season?
I don't know.
It must be.
There was nothing in Henrik Larsson's first season to indicate the player he was going to become.
That's nonsense.
I would respectfully disagree slightly on that.
It was a steal.
However, we've got a tie in top place. I think all of this demonstrates we've got a fantastic squad that is going to be there or thereabouts for the treble again this season. We are going to only improve it, and let's see how we go on in Europe. So the final question for everybody, and I just want one player, is somebody who wasn't in the top 10 this season who you think might make it into the top 10 next season, and you can even do that hedging your bets thing of saying somebody we've not signed yet. So I'll start with you, Saint. Is there going to be somebody in the top 10 next season? Do you know, there's some guy, he's never been on this podcast since he made this type of comment. I chucked him off. A young guy called Jack Lyons, and he had Owen O'Connell. He had Owen O'Connell would be in this year's top 10. Wonder what happened to Jack. Anyway, so Saint, who's your player in the top 10?
I'm going to go for Lee Griffiths, because he's the obvious choice. And the fact that, like Lackey, George, I'm a huge Lee Griffiths fan. I think he's a kind of player, I think he's approaching the peak now of his career. And, you know, we saw it again in the England game, we saw it towards the end of the season. And it's a disappointment to me that Brendan hasn't got a formation that he can maybe utilise Griffiths and Dembele, whichever formation that may be. But if you're asking me who's going to be it next season. I've got very, very high hopes for Lee Griffiths, and I'm horrified at the prospect of anybody suggesting that he should be sold for whatever reason it is. And I know he's got baggage, and I know that he can be a difficult character, but going by that adage, then Jock Stein should have sold Jimmy Johnson by 1968. But he didn't, because he appreciated that he brought something to the table. And I hope Brendan realises that he's got a wee gem there in Lee Griffiths, and with a stroke of luck, he'll do even better next season than what he did this season, and he'll be in the top 10.
Mark?
I'd assume that McGregor was unlucky not to be in the top 10 this year. So just on that basis, I could see him sneaking into the top 10 next year. I think if Dembele stays, he'll be number one. I think he's had a very good first season, and if he stays, he'll be excellent in the Champions League, and he'll dominate Scottish football next season.
Okay, Lackey?
I think if McGregor continues to develop, he will be, and so will Lee Griffiths, because if Lee Griffiths gets in the team, he'll be upset.
Okay, well, with that...
Where did Lee Griffiths finish last year?
Last year? Oh, yeah.
That's beyond goal or something.
I think he was number one last season.
That's what I thought.
He was number one. Actually, last season people voted for the front three, and then as somebody said in a submission last year, I'm not allowed to stick trialist in the top 10, otherwise I would. So last season people were struggling, so it was Griffiths last season was the winner. So before we fall out about Henrik Larsson in his first season, or Jimmy McGrory, or whoever, I will leave the top 10. The only thing I would say, do you know, actually, we're talking about comparisons, saying McGregor reminds me of Paul Wilson. I grew up not knowing why Celtic fans got on Paul Wilson's back. I started going to football when Paul Wilson was the whipping boy of the support.
Lovely footballer.
Paul was a fine player who again never really fulfilled his potential the way that we hoped. But no, I see Paul Wilson maybe being more similar to Sinclair, because he had that electric burst.
No, I'm just talking about in terms of the fans getting
The fans getting his back. Well, Tommy Callaghan was a guy for me when I was a boy. I always thought I'd get a hard time with that.
I used to give him a hard time.
Mark?
I think that after the two Rangers game, the two Rangers goals, I think that's over now. I think the fans have now kind of embraced McGregor.
I agree. And I think also because the fans are so much in awe of the opinion of Brendan Rodgers. Brendan Rodgers telling the fans that McGregor's a good player has also changed people's opinions. But with that, I will say, guys, thanks very much, and onwards and upwards for the new season.
Cheers.
Will you stay in the lover's story? If you stay, we won't be sorry, because we believe.
So there you have it, the definitive top 10 list of players as voted for by listeners to this podcast for season 2016-17. To go through it again, the top two tied in first place, Scott Sinclair and Scott Brown, and you heard St Anthony's incredulity at that decision, and you heard that the rest of us actually had Scott Brown as the winner. Then in third place, Armstrong. Fourth place, Dembele. Fifth, Tierney, Roberts, Rogic. In joint eighth place, Gordon and Simonovic, with Lustig in tenth. The Samaras Award goes to the Rogic Cup final. But of course, we can't have a tied first place, can we? Regular listeners will know over the years, on the 11 years or so that this podcast has been going, that Rule 6, Paragraph 3 of the Celtic Underground Top 10 Awards means, if there's a tie, that the winner's Georgios Samaras. So there you go, 2016-17 Player of the Year's actually Samaras. No, it's Scott Brown and Scott Sinclair tied. I'm going to look through and see if anybody actually managed to get... split hairs over what order you got Sinclair and Brown in, And I'm not going to split hairs over what order you got Simonovic and Gordon in. I very much doubt someone will have got that, but then it's 200 votes, so who knows? Anyway, that's enough of that. There'll be more podcasts along soon. Over the course of this season, some of the music that we're going to stick on, I've decided I'm going to go for unusual covers that you haven't really heard before. So there's the covers that are on this podcast already, and there'll be more along soon. Let me know if you know an unusual cover version and I'll stick it on. That was the guys. That was Lachie Moore, Mark Cooper, St. Anthony. This is me, Harry Brady, saying good night and God bless. Good night. So take a chance with a couple of cuts hung up on romancing.